Welcome to the Startup Addict Podcast. I'm Nick Swinburne. I've been starting companies for over 20 years now. I've had some big successes, like Zappos.com, and lots of failures. Regardless of the outcome, I'm still convinced there's nothing more addicting than trying to turn ideas into reality.
All right, welcome to episode number 15 of the Startup Addict. And today we have a special guest. Nick, would you like to introduce?
That's it? That's all you got?
Yeah, you told me.
So Dennis just asked our special guest how to spell his name, and we all listened to him spell it, and then we looked at Dennis's paper, and it was totally different. And then we're like, what did you write there? He's like, that's what he just told me.
I swear.
But it wasn't. Today we got a sticker farmer. We got Ben Pichetti, the sticker farmer. His first podcast?
First podcast, yep. First
all right.
Anything.
All right.
I feel important.
So Ben... met him probably 10 years ago.
Probably, yep.
He had a company, or he still has a company, Big League Printing. And we had, I believe this is how we met, and we had a gym, or we had a clothing brand, Dethrone. And we were in a gym, Undisputed, right? Is that how we met?
Yep,
and
yep.
You had done some signage and stuff for them, so he did some banners and graphics and stuff for us. And over the years, he was awesome. He's got the craziest workspace you've ever seen. And always down for anything. So it was like, hey, you know, do you have, do you know anyone that could do this? And he's like, oh, I could do it. Do you know anyone that could do this? I could do it. I got guys. We can do it. And then over the years, we did a lot of things. And then, sorry, we're having some technical difficulties apparently.
I'm back on.
And then, but recently, all of a sudden, it was like, hey, Ben, you know anyone can do this? You know anyone can do that? And he's like, dude, I'm slammed. I don't have time for anything. Like, what? Shit. So we had to figure out how to survive by doing all these things on our own. but it was like, what are you so busy on? And so he'd say, man, I got, he had this other company, Sticker Farmer, and it's all kind of merged, blended together, I think. But it was just crazy to see how it started and just watching the process and, a guy who's kind of down for anything and almost basically created his own world.
Yeah.
And literally, if you go to his warehouse, he did create his own world, created opportunity for a bunch of his friends and watched an industry kind of grow up around him, and all based on something that she likes doing all the time anyway. So it was it was amazing. So anyways, I thought it would be a good guest, a good story to share, a great example of it doesn't have to be like sit in your room at night and hack some code together and launch the next Facebook. So, anyways, Ben, welcome.
Welcome.
Right on. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
That was a better introduction, Dennis.
I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, good.
That was better than Dennis's, or Dennis's would have been better?
No, yours was better.
Okay. Well.
Other than the fact that everyone was running around the table moving wires while I was talking. and they're doing it quietly, so I wouldn't get distracted, but I couldn't help it.
We still got distracted.
Yeah. Okay, so Ben, I guess let's start with kind of some background. I'm assuming born and raised Redwood City.
Yep, born and raised Redwood City. Came up out there making stickers and graphic designs and all that stuff, and it kind of all leads to where we're at now.
But what about if originally? So you had, over the years, you've shown me stuff from like a long time ago, right? Like you had like jackets, you and your wife were painting and just random things. You've always kind of been into graphic art stuff.
Yeah, the first thing we did, or I did when I was in high school, is I silk screened a shirt for myself in art class and got a good response from my friends, and kind of that was the start of that.
What was it? What was the shirt?
It was my little group called Gone Crazy. We were just a group of dudes that liked to smoke weed and hang out, and we decided to brand ourselves and move forward with it, and that lasted a few years. It's kind of hard to start a business with all your friends and buddies in high school. You can imagine all the things that get in the way of that. But it's definitely all part of the progression to get to where we're at now.
And are some of those Gone Crazy gang, are they still around?
I mean, they're still around. We're still friends, but I don't do business with any of those guys. It's all definitely changed over the years.
Yeah.
After the high school original thing, I took one of the dudes. There was like four of us in high school. Then one of the dudes, we went and did a business together. That lasted maybe 4 or 5 years, and then
what kind of business was that?
that was based around music and entertainment and promotions and parties. And we owned a few party buses and some limos, and we would gather people up and take them to the clubs and get paid to bring the early crowd.
Nice.
How'd you get into that? Like, how do you set the business up like that? The party buses, you just start.
We were networking already. We had a big network. We owned a recording studio. The rappers would come to and make their music. And then me being a graphic designer, I would sit in my office and make their album covers and all that stuff.
So you had a recording studio too?
Yeah.
Wow.
I had a shop when I was 20.
Jeez.
I'm 38 now. So I definitely went and had a few jobs. I did law firms, flower shops, and everything else in between in the meantime.
Yeah.
But this is my passion, you know, making shit.
Yeah. So what did you ever have a point where you're like, you're in high school and you're like, what am I going to do after high school? Because now you have kind of a fuck it, just do what interests you and see where it takes you approach. But were you in high school, were you thinking like, shit, what am I going to do for a living? What am I going to do with my, am I going to go to college? Am I going to get a job? Like, what am I going to do?
No, I knew I wasn't going to do any of that shit. I knew when I was real young that I was going to take my own path and do my own thing. And
where do you think that came from?
Shit, I don't know. Maybe just watching my dad work so goddamn hard.
So you like know? You thought, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, he was whooped every day he came home, you know? So I was like, shit, that seems like a lot of work to me. And then, you know, I also like to make stuff. And I always knew that making stuff was going to be part of my deal. So it was going to involve art or creativity in one way or the other.
What's your dad do?
He was a truck driver, Teamster for 30 years.
Oh, wow.
Drove forklifts and all that stuff out on the docks in the city. And he'd leave the house real early and come home tired, you know?
Wow. So right after high school, you just started going after it.
Yeah, pretty much. Right away, we got the recording studio and started that. And that was like real messy. You don't give kids a business or a building or anything like that.
Do you have any albums or recordings that you've done there?
No, me, I don't do any of that.
No?
This is like the only thing I've ever recorded in my life.
Oh, wow.
I never once tried
the Lost Ben tapes. Yeah.
I never tried to rap or make music, or I never identified with any of that as far as me personally, you know?
That's crazy that you just, whatever you feel, you just go for it.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it, is just kind of sticking to my own game plan and trusting my gut and, yeah, doing my own thing.
So where were we in the story? The last business was that you talked about was the recording studio?
No, we started with Gone Crazy.
Oh yeah.
So I'll break it down for you real quick. Gone Crazy was the one that started in high school. That was like a clothing line slash rap group type deal.
I want to hear those tapes. I just do.
There's some good music back there. The guys were all talented. I believed in all of them, and we put a lot of energy into promoting them and stuff like that. The second company was called Chubby Greens. That was me and another dude named Jake. We had good success. You know, we had fun. We attracted all the right people. I don't know that we made too much money, but somehow we paid our bills. Whether it was like legit or not didn't matter at the time. And then I took a little break there because I had linked up with my wife and we started doing the hand-painted shirts and jackets that you were talking about. And that was like the spark of everything. Once her and I connected and I started selling her art. We did those murals at those gyms you were talking about, and that got us a lot of credibility. And that was the first time I got to make some good money, have a few bucks to actually survive off of from selling art. And I don't know. Someone else picked me up here.
So at that point, after selling the art, that's when you kind of consolidated everything under Big League Printing?
What happened there is I went and worked for a few sign shops like the chain, Signorama, Fast Signs, and I got a lot of knowledge about the digital printers. I wasn't really getting along with the people I worked for, and I went to work for a guy that was like a graphic shop house or something like that. It wasn't like a chain. And I did sales for him, and I sold like $50,000 worth of graphics in like 3 months, right? Which was way more money than I had ever even talked about at that point in my life. That dude got backed up owing me money because I was selling so much shit. I think he owed me about 10 grand or something like that, you know? I don't remember what the numbers were. But we had an argument. I left there. And shortly after that, my mom came to me and was like, hey, instead of trying to look for another job, why don't I try to help you with a loan, get some money? And at the time, it sounded crazy because I had no idea what it was going to take to own my own business. And shit, we did it, man. We got the loan. It was $50,000. Bought a printer, a laminator, and, you know, the material, vinyl and ink and all that shit.
Yeah.
And got started. And I remember at the beginning, my goal was $7,000 a month. I forget how much my shop cost, but I was like, if I could sell $7,000 a month, then I could survive and pay myself and make it happen, you know? And that's how it started.
So your mom obviously supported the entrepreneurial stuff and surprised you with the fact of like, hey, you should.
Yeah, it was her idea. Wow. We were at a family party, and she just like pulled me aside and told me. I was like,
and where did that come from? Had she always kind of said encourage you to do your own thing, or she just saw like your, you know, she just had a epiphany moment when she saw, wait, you're selling a bunch of shit, you know how to do all this shit, don't do it for someone else? Or
yeah, I think that's what it was. I think she saw how hard I worked, you know, and decided that nobody else deserved that.
Yeah. Now, because I always say like my parents, because that's interesting, because like she literally encouraged you. Like, it wasn't like I always say my parents encouraged me by not discouraging me, right? They never told me anything I said. They said, yeah, it's possible. They never told me like, oh, you can't do that, or that's impossible. And so I always thought that kind of helped me get this attitude, this optimistic attitude of like, why would I think something's not possible? But yeah. It's interesting, right, how your parents can just like do something or say something which kind of shapes like, or give you that little nudge which pushes you over the edge.
Yeah, it did. It went a long way. Like I said, at first, I was like scared. I was like, man, $50,000, that's a lot to pay back. But without that little nudge, who knows what would have happened? I would have probably gone and got the next shitty job. At the time, I was like applying at law firms to be a mailroom dude and shit, yeah. You know? Like, yeah. Can you imagine?
Although it just occurred to me, now I'm going back and picturing this scenario, and I'm picturing your mom's sitting here going, all right, Ben, here's the two options I see. You're going to go try to beat the shit out of this guy because he owes you $10,000.
Or
that's not going to turn out very well. Why don't we just go and open your own thing?
Yeah, it was probably a little bit of saving grace in that sense.
That was funny.
Well, the interesting thing there, what you said to me was you had done other businesses, but you were still dead afraid about starting your own. What was the difference that you saw between, you know, the stuff that you had done before, your Gone Crazies and your other businesses, and taking that step into this sort of venture?
Like in high school, the way we raised money is we got everyone's parents to give us a $40 check for their sweatshirt, you know? So I got like 60, 70 kids' parents to give me a $40 check, and I had a cool little amount of money. Maybe that was like $2,000, you know?
Yeah.
So now you jump from $2,000 to $50,000 to pay.
Well, but
back.
There's the recording studio, which I figure it wasn't cheap to start off either.
Yeah, no, it wasn't, but it wasn't as challenging. You know, I think my business partner at the time had some cash and made it happen, and it wasn't my responsibility. My responsibility to that company was just to bring the creativity. This dude worried about the money and all that shit, you know? So when it came time for me to actually have to take that on and deal with that myself and pay that money back myself, it was a lot more scary.
Because we talked about that in other episodes too, right? When we were talking about raising money and how it can be very scary to like ask friends and family, because now you have a whole different set of burdens on your shoulder than just, you know, trying to raise the money on your own and asking friends for cash here and there.
Yeah, I had no idea how we were going to pay it back.
How long did it take you to recoup when you started the business? Like, was there a slow time and a little scary time?
There's slow years. Oh, wow. You know, like at first, I think the first year I probably made like 90 or 100,000 in sales or something. You know, it was just enough to maintain and keep going. You know, along the course, I linked up with Nick, and that I credit that for carrying me from like year 3 to year 7, you know, where a lot of businesses probably fail.
Yeah.
You know, this guy put me on a lot of cool projects, fun stuff, working for the throne. It's like, that's a good look. When you're a kid, and I consider myself a kid at the time, and you own a business and you work for national brands and shit, people look at that and they're like, damn, this dude's doing it, you know?
Yeah.
And we were. It's like, because I was linked up with Nick, you know? And
just because I didn't know how to do a bunch of things, so I'd be like, Ben, I don't know how to do this. You know how to do this.
So we did it all, too. Yeah. We did it all.
Anything imaginable, he'd be like, I know, I could take care of that. I could do that. It was
from
awesome.
Printing to helping him move the house or whatever stuff. It might be. It's just, it was work.
So how do you guys actually meet? Like, what was the, how did you
I don't remember. Connect? I mean, it was at Undisputed at some point, and I don't remember how or or through
you had them other dudes that were like running the brand, and I, you know, eventually they get burnt out, and then I end up dealing with you. Like most companies, I deal with the workers for a while, and then you get to the boss and you get to the real work, you know, and you get to the cool shit.
Yeah,
I do need to go to his warehouse over the years and be like, oh shit, we have like, we have all these remnants of like old businesses we had, like, wait, you have a cage there, and we have this and we have that. And but what was interesting is, so Ben's the majority of time, well, you had the shop in St. Carlos, right? That was at first.
Yeah, I'm in like my third or fourth shop now. I had a little one when I first started. It was like 400 square feet.
I totally forgot about this.
Then I went to 600 square feet or 800. That's where I met you. I remember one time I was like, oh, let me give you a tour. And it was like one room.
Which is kind of like how our office is right now.
And then we jumped up to maybe 2,000 square feet. Now I have 6,000 square feet. I'm completely full. I got 25 pallets delivered on Friday. My warehouse is fucking packed to the gills right now.
So what's interesting is, so when he moved into the 6,000 square feet, the primary business at that point was the big league printing stuff, right? So I always looked at it like, or at least looking back on it, what's crazy is, so he takes this space, well, not necessarily out of business, just out of like passion and interest. He's got this big warehouse, and on day one, it's a normal warehouse, right? And then he starts inviting, I never quite understood it, but he starts inviting artists in, like graffiti artists. So all of a sudden it's like, oh, look, that wall's cool. That's got a big fucking graffiti thing on it. And then there's another one. And there's another one. And all of a sudden it's like, he's basically created this space for these guys to come and do graphics and do all that stuff. And then it just kind of layers on top of each other where it's like, oh, there's another one. And I remember talking to him, and then you just kind of talk about that. And then it turns into, hey, we can do some designs and some stickers for your art, right? So instead of just having your piece on a wall somewhere, you now have like merch that you can hand out, and I can help you with that stuff. And
yeah, I kind of tapped into the graffiti sticker world, and that, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna paint this warehouse, I'm gonna get these dudes to know me, trust me, and like me, and then I'm gonna sell stickers to the graffiti artists. You know, graffiti artists don't have like a big budget, you know, most of these dudes are like, you know, whatever, but there's a lot of them. So, you know, we got the warehouse painted. Now I have a cool background to all my pictures. So every time I post a picture in my Instagram or whatever, it's something cool in the background, you know? And then we built up through the graffiti dudes to what we're doing now, which is servicing the cannabis industry. And a lot of those artists from the graffiti time then turned into like marketing dudes for weed companies or whatever. So a lot of those relationships still exist. It's just turned into something else now, you know, completely different.
Yeah, so there was always a smell when you went to Ben's place, right? And you just kind of be like, eh,
whatever.
I'm gonna ask him about it.
Whatever. Cares,
it's like Ben's place.
And then, you know, it was very like, but it was over the years, it was kind of like, oh, he smokes all the time, and then I guess as how that's seen, right, in California and stuff, and it was like, huh. I remember when you did one of the Dragons games, and I was like, dude, it just smells like the. Like a Scooby-Doo van just opened on, and like you'd see puffs of smoke coming out, and his whole crew's running around working a million miles an hour, but also high. And I'm thinking, I can't do that. I remember in high school, right? I had a friend, and he'd get super high in the morning, and then the first friend I ever had that drank coffee because he worked at Pete's, and he'd go to Pete's. We'd ride our bikes to school. We're like, I don't know, sophomores or something. I wasn't getting high in the morning, but he was. And then we'd go to Pete's, and he'd get himself like a quadruple shot of espresso. And I didn't get anything either. And I'm like, dude, this kid's crazy. And he's like, hey, you want to get high and like go like, you know, do something? And I'm like, okay, in my experience, doing something is not really an option, right? Like at least, well. But it was interesting. So it was kind of this, but what's weird is it, like, so getting to that, we always talk about like, or you know, I don't know if we always talk about it, I always think about it. He's like the authenticity of things, right? Like it's just what you're naturally interested in, you naturally do, a community you're naturally involved with. Yep. That's like authentic, right? And if you, like, say if I said, hey, I want to start a water skiing brand. I've never water skied a day in my life.
Yeah, right? What the hell do you know about water skiing?
Yeah, what am I going to do, right? I'm going to go find a water skier. I'm going to sponsor him, and I'm going to go to events and try to sponsor a water skiing event, right?
Yeah.
Versus if a water, this is, maybe no one's ever used a water skiing example before, but versus a water skier would just be like, yeah, I'm sick, and these kids like watching me do these tricks, and so I'll pass my stuff out to them, and the guys are putting on the events, want to help me promote my thing, and he's in that world. But Ben was in this world of, like, graphic design and, like, art, because I think two different things, right? Graphic design for contract, like, do this for me, versus just, like, people creating art on walls or wherever, because they're passionate about it. And then, like, weed, right? And so he's, like, in that world, but that's not a business. Well, I mean, I don't want to ask about that, but that's just more of a lifestyle thing, right?
It's a culture is what it is. The people that are involved, it's a whole entire culture.
Like, the Go Crazy Gang is, like, that was since you were in high school, right?
Yeah.
So that's crazy. But then it's interesting with the times, right? So there's some people where it's, like, you look at the internet, right? And I'm always, like, well, fuck, Zappos would have never existed if my goal was to just open a shoe store in 1988. There was a shitload of shoe stores, and, like, how could I have done it, right?
Yeah.
Right now it would be harder because there's already a bunch of online shoe stores. So it was the perfect time of, like, just happened to be born, happened to be alive, happened to be curious in a point in time where there was opportunity within that space.
And the timing is crucial of it all.
Yeah.
Because even that part was a progression from it being illegal to becoming legal to this, like, weird gray area of this, like, free-for-all. It's legal, but there's no laws written. 2017, people made a fucking shitload of money, you know, because it's, like, this unregulated legal thing. Yeah. Now 2018 is here. It's all more regulated and stuff like that. But I saw it coming. I was lucky enough. When I first started my company, I did a bunch of work for this fucking assholes in this weed company. They fucked me for $17,000. You know what I'm saying? It took me a long time to rebound from that. At the time, that was, like, everything I had. I used up all my materials, all my ink.
Oh, wow.
I ran this huge event that was, like, one of the first fucking weed expos or whatever, and they stiffed me on $17,000, you know?
So how'd you recover? So you just had
I didn't. I fucking had two bad years after that. I turned on the weed industry. I was like, fuck these dudes. I don't want to work for any of these people. I don't want no part of it. You know, at the time, I was starting to figure out the stickers and the labels for them, but that put a bad taste in my mouth, and I got away from it. And I have a good friend that's tapped into, like, the entertainment world and shit like that. And he, you know, Goat Air Magazine, shout out Goat Air Magazine Network, love you for that. He pushed me back into the weed industry. You know, he was tapped in with a couple dudes. He was like, man, he kind of got me to open up my heart to it a little bit. And this is, like, maybe early 2017. I already had Sticker Farmer, the Instagram. I was doing Hustle Heads, which was, like, pretty fucking popular. You know, Hustle Heads was huge.
You still see those in, like, the Warriors. Well,
there was some stuff. Yeah,
the Warriors intro video on the big screen has, like, Hustle Heads in it and stuff.
Yeah, it was just too much legal issues. That would need, like, a powerhouse of money and licensing. And I already think somebody else already has all that shit sewed up anyway. But I was doing that at the time, and then the Warriors lost. The 3-1 thing, and then they lost. The morning after the loss, Steph Curry's lawyers have my website turned off through Big Cartel. So I wake up to my fucking company being shut off, my money being shut off. Jesus. I already had the Sticker Farmer Instagram, so I was like, all right, it's time to do Sticker Farmer. You know, and I had maybe like 3 weed companies at the time that I was working for.
So most of Sticker Farmer was, you segmented out. If you did stickers through Big League, you put it under the Sticker Farmer brand. Then you used the imagery from the warehouse to create the Sticker Farmer brand.
At the time, I was just using Hustle Heads. The Sticker Farmer Instagram was like a dead account. I had it for about a year before I even posted pictures to it, you know?
How did you come up with, because the Sticker Farmer is brilliant. How did you come up with that?
I had a client named Urban Farmer, who's a weed dude from Santa Cruz. And I was, like, making his stickers one day, and I was like, man, I'm going to do Sticker Farmer, you know? And I own, like, 10 sticker something or other websites, like Sticker Trapper. I got all these names and just, like, bought them all, you know? So eventually when I have my website set up, which is, like, I'm in the middle of right now, like, a real website, not, like, a small one, I'll market it under all different names to all different people, and just a place to buy stickers.
Dennis is going to get Sticker Go Crazy as soon as we get off the podcast.
He's like, oh, my Crooks God. And goons.
Crooks and goons.
Dennis, sticker packs.
If you look at Dennis, if you can see him on the video, I mean, he's just in a state of bewilderment. Like, you've basically lived his dream life.
I was like,
from high school on.
It's inspiring.
He's like, wait a minute. Wait, you did what?
What?
You music, studio, graphic design.
How is this possible?
This is unbelievable.
Man, talking about fun, taking the wrong turn.
So I'm going to go back to the music studio thing real quick.
You know what? It's good, though. That was the build-up, though. It's like, when I did all that stuff when I was young, it, like, it jaded me to a lot of stuff, you know? So now there's things that people my age might see and be super impressed by. To me, it's normal and it's part of business. And
I was talking with someone yesterday. Like, it's kind of a light bulb went off for me when I was talking to him. I was like, oh, I don't understand why you see this. Like, for example, I don't understand why you would see the situation I was working on as a negative. Why wouldn't you just go into it with, you know, eyes open as a positive thing? And then you realize, oh, because I've been through a similar experience and I had a good experience. And he'd been through a similar experience. It didn't work out well for him personally. So I mean, even though it seems so obvious,
it takes
I wasn't
a minute
putting
to like,
the two and two together on that each experience.
It takes a minute to like dig deep inside of yourself and figure out why you make decisions. Or, you know, I'll be working. I have maybe 10 employees right now, right? They ask me questions and then they want to know why. And I'm like, fuck, dude, I don't know why right now. Like, I fucking know the answer and that's because that's the answer. And then I'll give in, I'll let them do that shit. And then it gets fucked up. And I'm like, see, that's why. And I can't always pull up those answers why, but.
So your
you
gut,
speak from experience is the point.
So sometimes you go with your gut. Now, does it happen sometimes where, what would happen to me, right? If I said, I don't, because I have a hard time explaining what's in my head, and you get, it's frustrating when someone doesn't understand it, and you're just like, dude, like, I don't know how to explain it, but I could see it so clearly. Which was one of the reasons, you know, enjoyed working with you, is because there's some people where you say something, and you just kind of, over time, realize they kind of they're seeing the same thing in their head that you're seeing. They'll understand what you want. Like, hey, can we do something like this? Yes, it'll get done. But sometimes what's interesting is you get frustrated. They ask why, and then it makes you think about why. And then it's still this, like, it's still helpful that they ask why. But I have a hard time with that. Like, how do you deal with that? Like, with letting people getting their input and getting the thoughts that they have. So that you can learn from it, and also so they can grow. Versus at the same time, being like, "Dude, we're busy. Just hurry up and do this shit the way it's supposed to be."
It's a balance, right? Because you want people that think for themselves. You want people that make their own decisions and do the thing. But at the end of the day, I want shit done my way. You know, because that's what's working for us. You know, so you start to find these things in their personalities and the tasks that you give them and the things that you ask of them, and you can figure out who does what better. You know, and.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I ride home with my wife and we verbalize it all and we talk about every aspect of business and all of our employees and the crazy shit that they got going on, which is like a whole nother, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I never knew that part. I never knew their life comes along with it, you know, but it does. These dudes got, you know, baby mamas they're dealing with and vice versa, and people's lives are crazy, and when you're helping them,
what's vice versa? Mama babies?
Baby daddies.
Baby daddies.
Whatever. People in your life that cause drama, you know?
Yeah. So yeah.
Everybody has that, and that's part of me being the point man and dealing with all those people is deal with their problems a little bit too, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest thing I've learned, which just sounds so ridiculous attitude-wise, is like everyone's got shit going on, you know? When you walk down the street or you get annoyed with someone, coffee shop or anything, it's like everyone's just, I mean, it seems so obvious, but you get caught up in your own stuff sometimes that it's like everyone's just a person. You know, we talked about this the other day, right? Mm-hmm. Someone flips you off and honks at you. You want to be like, fuck, get pissed because you think they're honking at you. They're just honking at the world in their own life.
Yeah.
You know? So it, okay, so you, so it's interesting. So you, did you have a, like, I feel like this business basically, what I think is most interesting about it is it all just grew around you being you, which is crazy. Like, most people would have to make some adjustments. Obviously you've learned and made adjustments. Most people would have to like make a compromise and be like, this isn't, I'll change how I am in this situation, or I don't know how to describe it, but it's just crazy that you had these interests, you just kept pushing ahead in some linear path, whatever happens, you just keep going, and then this industry just at the timing just grew up around you. But even within that, like Julio said something the other day, which was like, Julio's very surprised right now.
I'm like, what did I say?
Right now he's like, he's what assuming
this is right in front of us. So make sure I said it the right way.
No, but he said, what's amazing about Ben is that it's almost like he created his own industry. It wasn't really like, now obviously there's a sticker industry and there's a pot industry and there's other people that make, labels and those kind of things, but you basically created your own world. And I think the reason it seems so obvious is because I'm more like visual kind of things, and like you literally created this crazy world in this warehouse. Anyone can go to Sticker Farmer at Sticker Farmer on Instagram. You can see pictures and stuff of his warehouse. But it And then, like, it's such a weird, not a weird, but it's such an unusual approach of, like, your marketing, your branding was all inside your warehouse. Like, you did some stuff outside of it. But a most logical thing, right, would be someone, like, and especially in this, like, Instagram world where you're sitting there, like, I always just picture someone's basically sitting there, like, eating a grain of rice, but then getting out there and showing this, like, giant
bowl,
you know, watch and, like, yeah, I'm fucking living the life. And it's all fronting, right? And all this exterior stuff, and it doesn't match reality. And yours is more like, no, I'm just going to, this is my own world. Within the walls of my fucking warehouse, this is it. And then that almost, like, created this opportunity. And then it was like, and then obviously then it was your experience and skill where it's like, hey, I can do this for you, and then I can do this for you, and everyone's like, oh shit, do that for me. And then, but even within that, I remember we talked about it sometimes, because every once in a while Ben will be like, hey, this shit's blowing up, I need to like see, like, are there things I should be doing to scale, or things I should be thinking about? And a couple times we've talked about it, and I have no fucking idea what I'm talking about, but usually at the end of the conversation it's like, no, dude, you just keep doing what the fuck you're doing. Like, yeah, you already know what you need to be doing.
We've had this conversation several times, and it always ends the same.
You're just, yeah.
You know what you're doing.
You're just not, like, you're just, anyone else coming in is just going to muddle this up. Because if you started acting and doing things exactly how everyone else would do it, then you would lose the reason. You've got this, like, credibility.
Yeah.
And this kind of, like, edge, which appeals to the audience and the people, and it's like, it's kind of like rough, not rough around the edges, but like kind of like, even, well, yeah, I mean, shit, even the stuff you, like, the comments you post on Instagram where you just call people out, or the replies you put is just honest. And so I'll be like, Jesus, what are you fucking, who are you fighting with now? Why are you so angry? And he'll be like,
that's the best part of his feed.
Yeah. He'll be like, no, this is the shit.
Pissed at somebody.
And this is why the people that come to me, because they know I'm exactly what I say, exactly what I think. Is what I say.
It's a balance between keeping it real and being a fucking dick. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you could keep it real and sound like a dick all day, or you can just, like, keep it real and keep it casual and really, like, I try to communicate with emotion and tell people, like, how shit makes me feel besides just mad, you know? Yeah. It's like, you really got to break it down for them. And as far as the social media shit, it's like, that shit's all a bunch of bullshit. You know, Instagram's great. The reason I'm in the position I'm in is because of Instagram, but you're right. People are just out there fucking faking it. And the truth is, I only show about 10% of what I got going on my Instagram, you know?
Yeah.
There's a ton of shit that we do that I'm not comfortable showing. I'm not comfortable showing you how many eighths my customers are selling, you know? Yeah. Shit like that. So you could see a part of it, but you can't see it all.
The other approach, which I think is interesting, and I think why this podcast hopefully will be interesting to people, is it's traditional success mixed with non-traditional success, in that there's no judgment of, like, I mean there's judgment, but it's not like, this is completely right, this is completely wrong, or this industry, I'm not, because it's authentic. Like, I remember saying to you once, well, what happens, right? Like, you selling a lot of labels to people, like, what happens when all the regulations come in and it gets super tight, and, like, is that going to eliminate? Like, does that eliminate? Does some of these brands go away? And does it eliminate this, that, and the other? And you were like, it doesn't go away. Like, there will be the brands that get super regulated, and they'll have a lot of advantages and ways, and they'll be more corporate. But it doesn't take away all the other brands. And so what's interesting, and so you're like, so those brands will always want to differentiate themselves. So what's really interesting is, It's weird how, like, legalization almost made, like, the unregulated, you know, not, like, it's not illegal, but whatever, not the non...
The black market.
The black market, yeah, I know the word. It made the black market need to brand, like, want to brand itself and see that it could brand itself, even though it doesn't need to. It doesn't have to put, like, the, you know, the THC percentage and all that shit. Right?
It's really hard to sell unbranded weed right now. Like, even if you are known and your shit looks killer, you still better have a little packaging or a little sticker to go along with it. So the person that's going to give it to the person, it's like, the one guy you hand it to, he knows because you're the man. But then he goes to the next guy. It's like, where? How do you prove that this is the real shit? You know?
And that's what I was talking about, of creating your own category, where it's like, you've made it so that people who want to venture in from the black to something that looks legit have to come through you.
Yeah. And I think, like, anybody that's starting a weed business, like, you're going to start on the black market. What are you going to do? Get a fucking $50,000 permit just to think you're going to start a brand? You know, it's like, it's a progress. You start, you get your logo, you put some logos on some weed, you do some pictures, and you get the ball rolling. Like, I guess that's black market, you know?
I guess no different than, like, homebrew. You just make your own beer.
Yeah.
Homebrew, you test it. You get enough success, and all of a sudden you get a distributor. Now, how does it... Because I've texted Ben a couple times. I'm like, what the fuck? All right, what's the business opportunity within the weed industry that's not touching product and is legal and blah, blah, blah? And he's like, what I'm doing? I'm like, okay. And then every once in a while, I'll be like, hey, can we make supervillains weed? You know, like...
How do we do it? Like, okay, yeah. Good one.
Who gets in trouble?
Warrior strain.
Is it legal? Like...
We want to license out the supervillain name.
I think I literally asked him that. I think I sent him a text the other day saying, could we license the supervillain's name to someone and they could put it on product and sell it? And but then, like, why would they want to do that? And why would we want to do that? It's like, it's all confusing. But it's interesting.
There's a ton of room in the industry. It's like the gold miners and the picks and shovels. Like, everyone knows who really made some money and all that. Most of the gold miners, you know, I'm sure some of them made some money. But
how many stickers do you think you produce? A month.
I was gonna try to do the math for a week.
All right.
I would say 150,000, and that's stickers. And then when you get into labels, I'd say a quarter million or more.
Wow.
The products are, this shit's crazy, bro. I mean, until there's a weed shop on every corner, like there's a liquor store, it's not caught up yet. You know what I'm saying? Just as much weed's getting smoked as liquor's getting drinking, and that's a huge fucking market, and that's the part that's blowing my mind. When you actually see, like, and it's a consumable. The shit that I'm making is in the garbage in a week. It goes to the distributor, gets put on the product, goes to the dispensary, ends up with the smoker, gets smoked, goes in the garbage. They're back again. It's a consumable, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the best part about what I got going on. When I was selling vehicle wraps or signs, like, okay, Nick moves into a building. He buys a sign from me. It's $3,000. I bought the sign for $2,200. I made $800 on it. Nick doesn't need any more signs until he opens another gym. Major investment.
Oh, really, so, I was buying the sign for $10,000. He was buying it for $100. This is revisionist math.
$3,000?
What? That was one of
Look at how quickly he thinks on the fly. He's like, what's a reasonable margin to say?
Whatever it is, it's not as much as if you buy a sign a week. Yeah. If you buy a sign every week, then I'm winning, no matter how much I'm making off of it, you know?
Yeah.
And then the other thing, which is, so I don't know, what percentage of the label, like the stickers and labels you sell, are to companies that are regulated versus companies that aren't?
I don't do background checks on anyone.
No, I mean, because you don't need to. But like,
yeah, but if I had to guess, I'd say it's 50-50.
Because the interesting thing is your business in theory is law proof. Like if the laws change, it doesn't mean people stop smoking pot. It doesn't mean that there's no more selling. It and doesn't mean that it's illegal to sell labels and jars. So it doesn't matter to you really if...
If SD company goes out of business tomorrow, there's going to be another.
Because if a big company goes in and spends a whole bunch of money in infrastructure, assuming the laws are going to stay the way they are, builds their brand, gets it all out there, does everything, and then they're actually dealing with product, and then the laws change, that whole business is like on shaky ground, or the, I guess the federal law is different than the state law, or whatever it is. I don't really even understand it all. But that's the other cool thing, is yours is just, at its heart, it's still just graphic-driven branding, which everyone's going to need no matter what. It was just that if it had never been legalized, there wouldn't have been as much of a demand for. I mean, you see in a movie or maybe like, you know, you have acid, which has a little picture on it or whatever, and it's like that's how it's defined. But I always just pictured pot as being sold in a little baggie and just was what it was. You knew who you got it from, so like that's how you gauged if it was good or not. You never now never probably would have pictured
so
that it
many,
would be
there's
like
so
this.
Many types and strains and. Sativa and indica and CBD, and there's so many different types, and people are educated about it now. So maybe 15 years ago, people didn't know there was even different strains of weed, let alone different flavors. You can get banana, lemon, you know, all these other crazy flavors, and you actually really taste this shit in the weed. It's like they're breeding it to be specific now, so people want an explanation for what they're smoking, and that's how you charge.
Nice. And then what, like, industry-wide, it feels like it's almost like one of the cool things. It's almost like this band of renegades are now prospering, right?
Yeah,
and
it's like, dope.
And learning so dope. About and learning more about business and turning into businessmen and learning just traditional things without having to change or do anything. Like I just and that's just based on watching videos on your Instagram.
I know a ton of dudes that dress like me, look like me, that are turning into millionaires right now. It's fucking super dope to see it. It's all kind of like, it's not anti-corporate because no one really gives a shit. You know, they're just not a bunch of corporate dudes. They're not, you know, they're not like that. We don't really wear suits and shit like that. It's just, they dress normal. These dudes are farmers and regular dudes and they work their ass off. And, you know, in that community, everyone can relate to each other.
Yeah.
It's when you go outside of that, maybe they go to these bigwig investors or something like that. It gets a little weird, but you can spot those guys in the crowd.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what everybody's fear is like big money taking over all this shit. And then everybody's not winning anymore, you know?
And what's the, so what is coming up? Like, what are your goals? What's your goal for when you've gone from, I remember the first time you told me you had some sticker machine and it was, then the next time you had a sticker machine, which was running 24 hours a day.
When I met you, I had one machine. I have about 15 now.
Yeah. And then, but I remember the big one, the big change seemed to be when you had the machine and it was part of what you do. To all of a sudden you had two, or you had one that was running 24 hours a day, you got a second, they were both running 24 hours a day, and you were just kind of like, it's getting crazy.
I can't keep up.
Yeah, I would tell the guys
that we had a list of like, look at this list of people I can't even get to.
Yeah, I would have like 100 DM in my Instagram, can you make our logo, can you make me stickers, and like, I'm just now to the point where I have a staff to back that up, and the machines to back it up, you know?
How do you vet those people that actually direct message you?
So for a long time, I've been sending them, basically making them email me. Like, if you can actually take the time to compose an email and attach some files, then you're probably good enough to do some business, you know?
Yeah.
But man, there could be a $10,000 sale there right there. Dude doesn't use email, you know?
Yeah.
So you got to try to figure out who those people are. I used to look at their Instagram and try to figure them out. Now I'm just like, give me your number. I'll have one of the guys call you, and they'll figure it out pretty quick.
Wow. And I saw there's a sticker farmer Mendocino or something.
Yeah, Sticker Farmer Mendocino is a good friend of mine. He's up in Laytonville. We're trying to open up a shop up there. It'd be so more.
Is that a model? Like, because I saw you even put on your post, learn how to be a sticker farmer. Like, do you see there being sticker farmers all over?
Yeah, I'm trying to do up north Mendocino, which is Laytonville. I'm trying to do Sacramento with Ganja Guru. He's a super dope dude up there. And then I want to do Salinas also. Salinas is just huge farms down there. I went to farms. 200 employees, you know, rooms full of 50 people trimming bud. Like, there's some big things going on down there. So if I could just get a kiosk set up in each town, I'll do all the printing in Redwood City. I'm just going to get them set up with like some sort of production that they could handle at each location. And really, these farmers need a place to, you know, drop off their money and pick up their jars, you know, and they don't want to drive from Mendocino all the way to Redwood City or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm just trying to spread out, but that shit's tricky. You know, you're like spreading your brand. You're letting people use your brand. You're letting people who you don't know very well identify with your brand, and it's confusing to people. So that's where I'm having a hard time, like, letting go of that part, because I control the branding. You know, I'm the reason, like, I'm the art director behind the whole thing. As soon as I have all these other locations, it's like, who knows what's going
to
happen.
Trying to keep control of it.
Yeah.
How you brand it.
And quality, right? So it's I guess the same as any franchise or thing that expands is like, you know, if you do it yourself, you can get a certain amount of quality. You can give a playbook to someone else, but it's hard to, you know, some percentage of them are not going to do it right. And the pain of that is like, and the stress of what might happen is like, what gets you.
Yeah, the one in Sacramento is like appealing to me. These guys got permits. So now you can actually drop your weed off to one of our locations. Not yet, but you'll be able to like, say, bring me 20 pounds of weed. We'll actually take your weed, process it, put it in the jars, give it back to you. Or even, we'll even have a distributor pick it up, take it from that location directly to the dispensary, because that's how it's got to be done now. Right now, I just make the containers. I make the bags. I make the jars. I give it to them. They deal with it from there. I'm not permitted. I don't want fucking hundreds of pounds of weed in my shop. You know, I got my kids around there. It's not, moving, not ideal.
Yeah. What was that? There was that movie, right? What was that movie where, I don't remember. There was a movie where they were doing something legal. They started doing illegal, and it just got you thinking, like, yeah, what's going to happen when it's legal and these vans are driving around or transporting the shit? Like,
yeah, it's armored trucks now. These dudes have their cash moved with armored trucks. They have their weed moved with armored trucks. It's the distributor, they have these big events on the weekends. Like, they actually have to have the distributor bring the weed to them and pick it up in the night before these dudes keep it in their car, keep it in their trailers. It's like a nightmare. These people are getting robbed left and right. They're following them home fucking 50, 60 miles, robbing them at the gas station in their hometown cities.
Oh, wow.
There's a lot of fucked up shit going on. So that's why, you know, that's why you get the armored trucks and all that shit.
Yeah, it would not have the weed in the shop.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not for me. I'm staying in my own lane. I'm a printer. I'm a sticker maker. I'll leave that up to the other guys that are more experienced actually handling the product and all that shit.
How much time do you spend thinking about, like, what the next packaging will be like, what the next, like, you know, and saying, hey, I'm knocking out these stickers, I'm knocking out these bags and these jars. Like, how much time do you start thinking about, like, what's next?
Not as much as I should, probably, because the last time I did the bag. We have a Mylar bag, we put the sticker on, I call it Ben's Bags. I swear I've sold 100,000 of those things in like 3 months, you know, at more than a dollar each. Just the bags, we're sitting there assembling them one at a time. So it's like, if I could introduce the next new product, then I could probably do that again and again and again. But doesn't come that easy. Shit, just like that one just came to me in the middle of the night. I was like, man, what am I doing? I can do this. And I should probably get out there and go check out the rest of the world too, because I just sit in my shop in Redwood City.
It's a cool place to hang out, though.
There's a lot of shit out there.
What's the transition been like for you as somebody who's, you know, worked their ass off the entire, you know, your entire life to now, you know, managing 10 employees or so? Or
The management's it's tricky, and I'm learning every single day how to do it, and there's no handbook for any of this shit. There's no one really to ask. You know, Nick's probably one of the only dudes that I could, like, reach out to and run some things by. I have other friends that own businesses, so we chit-chat about that. But, man, the physical side of doing it all myself is hard, you know? So that part's nice. I have the guys load the machines, carry all the shit, pack all the shit. That part's nice, but I find myself just standing in the middle of the shop all day telling people what to do. It's kind of crazy. And then I plan it. I time it. I coordinate it. I know what needs to be done at 4 o'clock. They don't, you know? So I come in and get it all going and coordinate everything. And every day we're maybe putting $5,000, $10,000 worth of shit out the door, you know?
What do you – this has nothing to do with anything, but a funny thing about Ben, which I was – is he's so calm and focused and in control of his environment. And one time I offered to drive somewhere and he hated it. He had the hardest time just driving in the car as a passenger. And I can't look at him without thinking about it. He was like, I was just looking at him. I'm like, what the fuck? And he's literally like, I fucking hate being a passenger. I hate this. I need to be in control.
I'm sensitive to motion. I get motion sick, seasick, all that shit. And at the end of the day, I'm Nick a control drives? Freak. I'm a control freak though. So I know that's what it is. Like, I'm not in control, and that's why I ended up driving us home from San Jose that day.
Yeah.
In your Tesla. That was hecka weird to drive. But I've learned
to, like, I got rid of that car right afterwards.
Be upfront about that shit. Like, I don't just jump in the passenger seat, and that's kind of like my whole life. Like, I don't go into situations I'm not comfortable with. If I don't like some shit, I verbalize it and tell everybody, like, I don't like this, and I'm not going to jump in that car and get sick or do that business deal and get sick and not enjoy being this guy's business partner. I just be upfront about it and not have to worry about it.
Yeah.
And that's a big lesson in and of itself, because big or small, the most frustrating decisions are the ones where you can't figure out why you made it, right? Like, you don't, like, say you don't have time, like, you know you're going to have a super busy day. You don't have any fucking time. But yet you told someone, yeah, come by, I got time. And
fucking
then it's like,
dumbass, I do that shit all the time, dude.
Right,
I do
afterwards,
it every day.
You're like, what am I doing? And the person comes in, it's almost like you hold it against them, but they had no idea. They just said, you got a couple minutes, and you're like,
you told me to come.
Or they text, you know, you say, like, yeah, come by at like 2:30, and they text you at 2:15, like, hey, still cool to come by at 2:30, and you're like,
fuck
no, it's fuck, God damn it.
Sure.
It's fucking
yeah, go ahead.
Sure, go ahead.
I gave you my word.
I'll be ready.
Overcommitting. I really try to. Even with my guys that work for them, like, dude, don't overcommit to these dudes, man. Of course they want the shit this afternoon. Their fucking weed's held up, sitting still. You got $40,000 worth of shit sitting still. Of course they want the stickers. They're going to tell you anything to get that shit. But don't overcommit, because that's even worse when the dude shows up at 2 and nothing's fucking ready.
Yeah. What do you, so what's changed as you've scaled? As you've, like, have you, you've got a team. Do you, like, have you run into any, like, problems that you're having a hard time with, as far as, like, because it's still, it's just the same
every
thing,
single day
it's it, right?
Growing pains, you know.
Yeah. But is it mostly just not enough time, not enough people, not enough machine space?
I mean, like, for an example, right now it's like the way all my business shit's set up, like, I can only spend so much a day. So first of all, I get a lot of cash. You can imagine that's an issue. And then I can only spend so much a day. I'm only approved. So I need to technically be spending twice as much a day as I even can, even though I have it. Because you can't just fucking go pay everyone cash and shit in the world. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
You have to have credit. You have to have credit cards. You have to have accounts that have money in them, or, you know, you can only spend so much from this account. So right now, that's part of it. And then you run into everything else, which is like stockpiling ink, stockpiling vinyl. It's like, we're just spending as much as we can to keep everything there. But still, I'd say one day out of every 2 weeks, I'm dead in the water because of materials. So that supply chain is just like getting gobbled up. And then I'm not the only one in this industry that's using up these materials either. So things like the bottles, I just bought 50,000 bottles, you know, because I have that many sold right now. So now I'm already sourcing the next 50,000. I don't even have space to keep the shit, you know?
Yeah.
So there's all those things I'm just like learning and figuring out that make it all go round and round every day. My wife stays on top of that, thank God. She does all the materials and all that shit. That's impossible. I couldn't do that and coordinate everything. I coordinate all day.
I figure there's people watching and listening thinking, shit, this is awesome. This is amazing. This is interesting. And then there's one person listening, your wife, going, this is all bullshit, Ben. I'm doing everything.
Yeah, for sure.
Why don't I have that podcast? What the fuck?
She's a huge part of it. Like, as far as like the work and the management and the organization, the shit that I think people actually think about when they think of owning a business, like, she does it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I talk to people. I go out and meet with people. I maintain relationships. I fucking yell at our employees and keep it all moving, like, in that department. But behind the scenes, she's doing it all, man. It's fucking unreal. And she's taking care of my kids, too.
Our yeah, kids. And you bring the kids, the kids are around the shop and the environment a lot. Like, how do you, so it's interesting, right? The way you were raised and gave you your outlook and your perspective on things, like, they're going to be pretty creative kids.
I hope so. Right?
They're going to be exposed to a lot of things.
They or the opposite. It's hard to tell how it's going to go, but.
Yeah.
I think, you know, for the most part, my older daughter is like 9 now, and you could already see the way she thinks about making things, or, you know, you can see that it's taking.
Yeah.
And then the other one's 2, and she's just crazy, so.
Yeah. I think you've done a good job of, what are they, Maisie's jar, the Maisie's slime or whatever it was called?
Yeah, I forgot, what was it called?
And I was like, wait, you have weed jars with your daughter's name on it? He's like, no, but we put slime in there. So it's this, it's,
you know. Oh, we did mermaid blubber.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Because it's just packaging and graphics, you know?
Yeah, you could put anything in a jar with a sticker on it, as long as it fits.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Mermaid blubber.
Yeah.
Very dark.
My kids are definitely integrated into all of it, and it's a huge part of staying young and creative. I think that's what the creative side is, like a little bit of being a kid left, you know? And yeah. I think most of that left me when I was like 22. My best friend died and shit, and that, like, I was like, fuck, dude, it's like I was trying to be a kid still, and then life got so fucking real, you know? It took a lot away from me then, but
yeah.
For the most part, I try to remember what it was like to want everything that I have now.
So would you encourage your kids to go to college, or just kind of follow your...
Yeah, go to college, go travel the world, go do all kinds of other shit. I didn't go anywhere. I stayed right here. I didn't go to school. You know, and she's going to, you know, the business is hers if she wants it, but I'd rather she go learn even more, be able to take it even further.
Yeah.
How many, you were talking a little bit about competitors. What's that like? You know, you got in, I mean, from my perspective, from on the ground floor when it comes to the business that you do and the category that you're in. What's it been like seeing people have like light bulb moments and try to compete with you?
I think at the end of the day, I don't think Sticker Farmer actually has competition, because there's nobody that like brings all the things to the table as we do. There are dudes that do packaging. There's dudes that do logos. There's people that do graphic design, but not on our level. And the guys that are, you know, following in our footsteps, or however you want to call it, like, it's fine. I feel dope to be inspiring people to go make their own living or whatever. Like, just don't copy my shit like directly, you know. And it's a fine line. It's a fine line between taking someone's ideas and stealing their business.
Well, didn't you have someone on Instagram that asked if you could send them the high-res file of one of your graphics so they could use it on their packaging?
This was recent, too. I remember that.
Yeah,
one.
That's every...
It was a big F you.
Look, I don't...
Can I get it for free?
That's part of the new industry, new business people. Yeah, there's a huge disconnect there. People don't understand how that works or what it takes to build a brand, and that I can't just sell you my labels to put on your shit so you could take credit for
yeah
yeah
the hard work.
What So what advice would you have for a kid in high school? Knows he doesn't want to go a traditional route, you know, like, and it's hard, right? Because I always try to be aware of, like, what's revisionist looking back and what's, like, combined with the reality of each time moving forward. But, like, how, I guess I've already changed my question. How long, because you stayed true to a vision for a long time, even when it wasn't as prosperous as you hoped or needed it to be.
Yeah, because I enjoyed it. I liked doing what I was doing. It wasn't about, still not about the money. Money is incentive. Money makes the world go round. Money makes people work harder. But that's not why I do this shit. I just like to make cool shit. And that's always been me. I just want to keep making shit. And then it all falls in line after that. And of course you need money. Of course I got to get paid for what I do. That's part of it. But I don't do it for the money, you know? Yeah. So it's motivating.
And that's the cool thing. I think the one universal thing that you hear from everyone in any kind of business, in any kind of role, is if you, it, but it sounds so simple, but when you haven't found that thing that you like, it sounds so hard because you're like, you know, and I think that you obviously learned at a young age what you liked and had the discipline or commitment to like staying in that field. I mean, you dabbled in other things, but ultimately you got a nudge from your mom and you got enough positive things happening that it kept you going. But really it does, you know, that's what I think it's a great story is it comes down to is just like, you just be yourself and being yourself involves doing what you like. And then you can have success in traditional, non-traditional businesses. You can have success in a, it's not a non-traditional business, but it's a brand that's inspired by a non-traditional business. And then lo and behold, the fucking business becomes a real business all around it, the industry.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. But then even when that happens and the industry becomes a big legal industry with big players and different people, the approach doesn't change. And the small guy, you're just as loyal to the small guy as you are to the big corporation, probably more so, right?
Yeah, because I can identify with them. I know what it's like to walk into a shop for the first time and try to figure out how to buy a banner. I did that. I remember the first banner I bought. They sold it to me for like $120. I was like, that's a great fucking deal. I had no idea what a banner even costs, you know?
Yeah.
I never even seen one printed or nothing, but I know what it's like to go to a shirt shop and have the wrong artwork and all that. Like, I did all that as a natural progression. So I identify with every single person that walks through my door, whether it's day one or year 10 for them, you know?
Yeah.
That's cool. Because it reminds me of like, sometimes you think like, oh, I should change this or I should change that. But, you know, you're a good example of just fucking be the same. Let the world adapt around you or just fit in the world. The world doesn't even have to adapt, right? Like, you just be yourself and the world around you is the world around you. Like, I went through the process of Zappos where I wore a suit and a tie to all these meetings and it never fucking worked, right?
There's got to be pictures of that somewhere.
And then the meeting that I didn't wear a suit to fucking worked. I had a job...
I just want a picture of that. That'd be so cool. Just hanging up in here.
Dude, somewhere. I got a picture somewhere.
I feel it's oversized for some reason. Like an oversized suit with big shoulders.
No, I got a job one summer randomly as as the dude that passes out the perfume and when you walk into like Macy's or whatever.
Oh, really? You were like, oh, little sense?
Someone I knew's mom managed that. So she's like, I need someone like this weekend. I'm like, fuck. So I had like long hair. It was all messy. And I went and got one of my dad's suits. And I just, well, no, I didn't get in my dad's suits. I just grabbed a jacket, some pants, and a tie, which didn't match or anything at all. My parents still have that picture. I'm like, what the fuck? Who would walk past that guy and say, and accept this fragrance?
Look where it got you, though. Yes. I did it.
So.
It all led up to this. So yeah. That was the reason you did that day.
Cool. Well, thanks for
thank you.
Thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for showing us how to be sticker farmers. Dennis is fucking inspired.
Good to go home right now. Get something started.
So the site works, stickerfarmer.com right now?
Stickerfarmer.com is the website. That's just like a little simple one we put together, but we're in the middle of putting like a real website together. So hopefully in the next couple months that comes together. And
Instagram is at stickerfarmer.
Come check us out.
He's been broadcasting live, so we've been...
Yeah, we're live the whole time. See how weird that was.
Especially with that bottle right in front of it.
Yeah. Yeah, they've just been looking at dry erase cleaner for an hour.
Better than a box of donuts.
Yeah. Where did the donut? Oh. All right, cool. Thanks for listening. Hopefully you guys were inspired by hearing Ben's story. You can follow us on Instagram @TheStartupAddict. Please subscribe on YouTube. We need We still need more followers to get our own URL.
Not as many as last week, though.
Okay, so right now you got to search for us. Thank you to everyone who did subscribe this week, because all Julio really wants is our own URL, and we're getting close.
Very close.
I want other things, too, but yeah, that'd be nice.
But most importantly, most URL. Importantly,
that yeah. Right. Hey, Ben can make you a sticker with your URL on it.
Oh, that'd be sick.
Yeah. We're going to do the podcast soon, the too, podcast. Right?
That's true, yeah.
We're going to do the podcast.
Talk to him about doing a series and meeting more of the industry. People
I
in the
think
industry.
People would tune yeah. in. They'll tune into that.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Goodbye. Bye.